from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
What'd you do this weekend, Ursula? You know, what'd you do?
I had a very social weekend, I must say. I went to a friend's house. Layla invited us. Layla and Amir, her husband, invited us to their beautiful home.
Yeah.
In Kirkland.
Okay.
And it was a dinner party, and she made the most delicious Persian meal.
Yeah.
You know when you have those friends who are the best entertainers?
Mm-hmm.
And she knows, she's like the hostess with the mostest.
Yeah.
Knows how to set out a beautiful table and makes the most delicious food and makes it look effortless.
Yeah.
That's Layla.
Yeah.
So that was Saturday. And then yesterday I went to a birthday party of a friend or a friend's mom. So I had a chance to see some other friends. It was one of those very social weekends, and I loved it.
You're just social, huh, Ursula?
Not to mention the weather was perfect.
I know. I noticed.
What'd you do this weekend?
I noticed you didn't talk about yard work.
Mostly because Mark was doing it.
All right. Yeah, you know me. I worked all weekend. Rick Riz is going to join us today at 10:30. We're going to ask him, hey, Rick, why is it that the Mariners have gotten off to a slower start than expected? So he joins us at 10:30. But right now, Ursula, what you got for us?
What's new at 10?
So the question we have this hour is, should we make it easier to graduate from high school? Because schools in our state will be able to continue waiving some graduation requirements this year, essentially extending a pandemic policy that allowed districts to waive 2 credits along with graduation pathways credits. So basically what that is the graduation pathways require students to combine 1 language and 1 math credit that are meant to get kids ready for going to college. And the State Board of Education made that decision last week. But for this school year, 1 credit can be waived along with the graduation pathways credits. And one of the reasons is because most schools are saying that without these waivers, a bunch of kids are not going to graduate. And a lot of it is blamed on the pandemic.
Hmm.
So my question would be, are we blaming too much on the pandemic? Is it a good idea to waive standards, or are we just dumbing down our students today?
Get your pen and paper.
Okay.
You're going to.
Uh-huh. Take notes.
Yeah. You ready?
Uh-huh.
I disagree with this. Yeah. I think the default card in a lot of our problems today is there are problems. Like, there was a real thing. Like, the pandemic is a real thing. Like, we went through some stuff, and we all know we went through it together. It was ups and downs. There's going to be studies that are going to be written about during this time. This will be talked about in 100 years. We went through a lot. I want to get that out of the way. But while we went through a lot, we are also becoming a society of using it too much as the default.
The crutch.
The crutch. The, well, Johnny, well, Sarah, you're struggling because of what you went through during the pandemic. While that might be true, my father used to say crying falls on deaf ears. The truth of the matter is nobody really cares about these excuses. We are dealing now in a time where we have a truancy problem. Yeah, mental health is a problem, is a cause of it. But we also just have, we have kids that are less engaged. They're not going to school, right? All can be traced back to the start of the pandemic and where we are right now. And I think this requirement that they're doing it, while I understand that a lot of people wouldn't be able to graduate, I, for some reason, don't think things will be put back in place. So yeah, they're going to open up this box.
Yeah, I would rather
and it's going to keep this way.
I would rather they try to address the problems while the kids are still in school and help them get those requirements versus just saying, okay, we're just going to waive it again.
You thought I was going to say.
Seriously?
Yeah. Because.
Yeah.
Can I ask you guys an honest question, though?
Yeah, of course.
Sure.
What does high school graduation show? Except for it's a requisite to say, get a job at McDonald's. Because, like, first of all, the graduation pathways credits, Washington State is saying, we need all of our students to take these classes that prepare them for college when only 50% of our kids are going to college. So why are you requiring that for every kid?
Usually higher than
first
that.
Of all. Okay, so 2021, it was 50%. It was like about 60% in 2019. So obviously there was a pandemic dip. Why are you requiring that? Second, if you're talking about someone that is one credit away, functionally, what is the difference between that student and someone who has one more credit and their ability to do a job, to succeed in the world? There's a stark difference in earnings between non-high school graduates and high school graduates. So seriously, what is the difference with that one credit on someone's ability to succeed in society?
Could you argue that, though, for just about anything? So if it's going to be one credit, well, what about two credits? Is that big? Is it that big of a difference? Well, I think we're saying that why not address the problem instead of now waiving these things? And this sounds like it's just a temporary fix.
Sure.
If that's the case, but I don't want to get into the habit of let's just waive it. Already our standards of education are dropping.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of rising to the occasion, we're dropping our standards. And I think that's the issue that I have.
There's a lot, and I try to do a better job of compartmentalizing these topics and keeping things in one particular box. In this specific topic right here, I'm just addressing this. Now, I already have, Ursula, an issue with school curriculums anyways. I think that they are outdated. I don't think that they're really preparing the next generation for how to be better people in society, better workers, better all those things. There's a lot of things that you have to learn after school. While we don't have time because that's not the topic to address the curriculum that has been standard for the last almost 100 years. But I do want to address this making it easier. And I don't think once you make this while it's supposed to be a temporary thing, I don't think it'll stay temporary. I think this will be.
Well, that's my fear.
That's my fear in this as well.
Okay, so as long as we're talking about schools and education, it's about this time of year where hundreds of thousands of hopeful would-be college students are finding out where they've been accepted.
Sure.
And it's all over social media, and it's a thing where the students talk about and actually rank the schools with starting with the easiest to get into, ending with the most difficult, and they show, you know, their reaction to how they feel about where they get in,
sure.
Right? And so it's all over social media, and there's something that's just become very prevalent that kind of makes me annoyed.
Here are all the colleges that I applied to. I submitted more than 40 college applications and wrote 130 supplementals.
Not even joking. This is the outline of my Google Doc. More than 50 pages worth of essays.
I don't know what went into me. I went a little manic in my college application. Let me know in the comment section if you heard crazier stories. However, considering my citizenship status, I'm an international student and I'm Asian. So I don't know.
It's not just international students or Asian students, but it is students in general who are applying now. In her case, it was 41 colleges, but you hear of 20 and 30 applications being sent in. Why? I thought it was bad. So, and I want you to go with the passion that you had in our first segment.
I hope I can do it again.
Okay, we're laughing because it's about to get intense.
It is going to get intense.
Okay, so I will admit that with our oldest son, who was a fantastic student, he applied to 10. And he applied to 10, which it sounds like a lot. He actually applied to 11. I made him apply to one more. I wanted to see. I said, just see if you can get into Stanford. We toured it. I said, that's a beautiful school. I think he would have liked it. But it wasn't even his top school.
Right.
I was like, you know, you are the perfect candidate for a school like this. I'm curious if you'd make it. Well, he did not get accepted to Stanford, and it didn't bother him one bit.
Right.
But he applied to 10 that he was legitimately interested in. And that seemed like, you know, maybe even to some excessive, but we're talking about 25, 30, even 40 is not unusual these days.
Sure.
And I think that is something seriously, not to mention that it's very expensive. And you can say, well, you know, if they want to do it, they can do it. But these schools then have to decide who's going to make it and who's going to be accepted. Mm-hmm. And you could be taking the place of someone who really wants to go to that school and you have no intention of going. You're just going to see if you can get in.
Right.
It's kind of like bragging rights. Mm-hmm. And that just bugs me.
Yeah. I'll tell you what bugs me. Since we're having this topic, so as you all know, as a kid, I went to private school. You guys know that. Got kicked out of one, then went to military school. Been in private school, around a lot of rich kids. I've been around some rich kids. How about that? And then, as you all know, that my children, they went to private school over there on the plateau. I won't name the school, but you guys know about that. So here's the reason why I think we have this applications things, because keeping up with the Joneses is a real thing. And it sounds like this. And if I say something, and if you've heard this before, just go ahead and raise your hand and nod your head. It sounds like this, Ursula. So anyways, yes, Sarah's got all the applications in. She's already gotten accepted to like 15. So she's gotten accepted to 15. So we, as a family, we got to sit down and figure this out. So anyway, how's your child doing? Are they still going to be going to that trade school? Yeah. So anyways, are they still working at McDonald's or Burger King? What are they doing? So anyway, Roger's he's traveling back. We're going to go to spring break. We're not going to go to Cabo because Cabo and or Cancun is nothing but southern Seattle. We're going to think about going to Italy, and we're going to figure out this. And then meanwhile, the other friend comes in and says, 15 only? Oh, my goodness. Our little Roger got accepted to 21 colleges. We have to decide what's going on.
So Harvard, Yale.
Yeah.
It's so, kind of a tough one.
Yeah. So we're really trying to, got into Stanford. But we don't really know if we want to do Stanford. Joey's grandfather went to Stanford, so we can get in on the legacy part of things. But that doesn't come up in DEI because nobody talks about that. The legacy part of things is okay. But DEI, how dare that student get in because they're black or Asian? Anyway. So anyway, but the whole topic is this, Ursula. The reason why it costs so much money, the reason why Aunt Becky went to prison, the reason why is because there is this huge thing about being able to go to these prestigious universities. And meanwhile, There's somebody that applies to go to one college. They apply to go to Stanford, and all they want to do is go to Stanford. And little Tommy wants
Stanford
to go to Stanford
with the 3% admission rate. Don't feel bad if you don't get in.
But then
you need to have a backup or three.
But then you see this one kid who is a good foosball player, right? He's really good at football, and he gets to go to Stanford because, well, that's different. Because we value athletics, because athletics bring in billions of dollars to our economy.
Yep.
All right, I'm done.
What's wrong with applying to dozens of schools? Like, seriously, what's wrong with it? I understand that it costs money, right? And so some families may be able to plunk down $1,000, but you also have a lot of kids who are like, well, I know I'm going to get into a certain amount, but I also want to know what kind of financial aid or incentive package that they're offering me. And the more feelers I can put out there, the better.
That is legit, but that's not what I'm talking about.
Ah.
That is legit, and I think you can get that, establish that with 10, maybe even 15.
How many do you think?
Talking about 30 or 40 applications.
How many do you think you'd be able to apply to with your ChatGPT AI assistant?
Oh, it's going to get
that can fill out all your essays for you, submit all the forms, auto draft the check deposit. You're going to have kids applying for hundreds of spots.
So the Common App changed a lot of it because you could use a lot of the same essays, a lot of the same information, and do it. You just have to be willing to pay the fees. But now with ChatGPT on top of everything else, I feel for the admissions officers who have to read through everything.
I noticed when I went on that long 3-minute rant.
Yeah,
you didn't stop me.
No, because you were hitting some good points. You were hitting some familiar themes.
Because I have a feeling. Because one thing, have y'all noticed, rich people brag different, right? Like, we poor folks like me say things like, well, I made this amount of money last week. And rich people, they don't brag like that. They brag like this.
Or they don't brag. The really wealthy people don't have to brag. They will say nothing about their wealth.
You know those ones like, so, G, what are you and your family doing for spring break? My sons are going to help me wash cars. Oh, sounds good. Yeah, we're debating on Italy, or we thought about the Mediterranean and the Bali.
Bora Bora or the Maldives. Yeah, it's such a hard choice.
Our kids are so tired of Cabo. We're jealous.
So many less street vendors in the Maldives. People don't harass you.
Oh.
We sound like petty, jealous people. Okay, it's Monday.
All right.
What do they sound
That's
like?
Fair. But if I said anything, now, are you going to accuse me? I can't believe you, not one time did you say, gee, that was a sweeping statement.
No. I just let you go.
All right. Rick Riz, you guys know, voice of the Seattle Mariners. He's got to come in and help us understand what's going on with the Mariners. What's going on with Julio Rodriguez? And what does this mean with this kind of slow start? Next, Gene Ursula.
This hour of the G and Ursula Show is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors.
Cal Raleigh, the big dumper, with a two-run blast behind the back stab by Luis Castillo. Julio Rodriguez with an RBI single. Holy smokes, what a performance.
The Rick Riz Show with G and Ursula.
The Seattle Mariners came home on Friday to host interleague play with the Cubs in town over the weekend and the Cincinnati Reds on deck tonight. The season, unfortunately, is off to a rough start, but if we're going to look for something positive, the M's are still only two games out of first place. Rick Riz is the voice of your Seattle Mariners, and he joins us live now. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Ursula. How you doing?
So great to hear your voice.
Morning.
So, it's nice to hear yours, too.
Our team, of course, is in desperate need of a spark. Yeah. What is it going to take to get the bats hot?
Well, that's a great question. They just have to start hitting. And it's team-wide. Ty France is off to a pretty good start, and Mitch Haniger, but you go right down through that lineup, and I'm doing the lineup yesterday, and I'm writing down the batting averages, and seven of the nine guys are batting under 200. These guys
Ouch.
Can hit. They know they can hit. They've hit before. They're just not hitting here in the first couple of weeks of the season, and it shows. And obviously we can talk about that tough way to lose the game yesterday with Julio getting picked off for the final out of the game in the bottom of the ninth inning. But the truth is, it should have never gotten to the bottom of the ninth inning. Polanco hits a home run in the sixth inning to get the Mariners back in the game 3-2. And then they had all kinds of opportunities in the seventh and the eighth. They just aren't getting that clutch base hit. They had two on with nobody out, couldn't score in the seventh. They had the bases loaded with one out, and there's a double play ball, so they can't score in the eighth. So the truth is, it should have never gotten to the bottom of the ninth inning. It was a disappointing way to lose a ball game. They had a chance to win that game, as they have number of games. They've played, I think, seven games where they've scored, you know, only two runs or less. So they just have to start hitting. They can hit. They just need to start hitting. And whatever that is, you know, the hitting coaches are a heck of a lot smarter than I am, but I talked to Edgar Martinez about this, you know, who's one of the greatest hitters I've ever seen. I said, what'd you do with two strikes? He said, I shortened up my stride and shortened up my swing just to look to make contact and put the ball in play. And it'll happen. These guys know how to do it, and they're going to get it done. It's still really early in the season.
Yeah, it is early in the season, and I know it's, if you're a Mariner fan, it's not time to panic. We've learned that from you, Rick Riz. And so you have the hitting that's going on. You have the superstars, and you look at the batting averages. Your leadoff hitter in J.P. Crawford has not been doing well. Julio Rodriguez is just not hitting well. But it always seems like when people leave the Mariner uniform and go play other teams, that's when they start hitting again. I also want to talk about the fact that the ace that's on paper, the person that was pitching opening day, Luis Castillo, is 0-4. Should we be panicked about that?
I'm not going to panic with Luis, right now. Not at all. He put together a quality start yesterday. The Mariners should have won for him yesterday. Went six innings. It just seemed like his first three outings, he wasn't making his pitches. Changeups were leaking back out over the plate. With two strikes, he wasn't putting people away. This guy is still, in my mind, one of the best pitchers in the American League. So he made a rebound. It was just in his first three outings, something I noticed is that just the second time around the order, third time around in the order, they were getting to Luis in his first three starts of the year. And I think he did a much better job yesterday. So, it's a few starts on the season, and he's gonna get things turned around. George Kirby is going tonight. He's going to get things turned around. He had a great start. His first start against Boston, struggled in his next two outings against Milwaukee and Toronto. But this guy knows how to pitch. It's just a team-wide slump. The starters haven't been as great as we know they have been in the past, that they are right now. But the bottom line is they've got to start scoring some runs.
And then I heard there was an injury, too. There was a spectacular catch, and then it ended up with an injury.
Yeah, Dom Canzone made a great catch in the early part of that ball game yesterday. Mike Tauchman hit a fly ball all the way to the wall left field, and Canzone went racing back full head of steam. And as right as he made the catch with a leap, leaping up to his left, he ran into the wall, face plant in the wall. His shoulder went into the fence. And it's amazing, number one, that he was able to hang on to the ball, because as he was falling down to the warning tracker, so he looked at his glove to see if he still had the ball, which he did. Then he landed on the warning track, and there was a runner on first base at the time. So he lands on the warning track, and from his backside, he threw the ball all the way into second base. I mean, it's amazing that he was able to do that, but he had to come out of the game. Carl Torgerson, our head trainer, went out to check on him, as did Scott Service. And he suffered a UC sprain in his left shoulder, and hopefully he's going to be okay. I don't have any word on Dom right now, but it was a fantastic catch. But unfortunately, hurt himself slamming into the wall in left field. Hopefully he's all right.
Rick Riz, you're much more of a professional than I am. I got to tell you, I felt a certain type of way with the Cubs coming to town. I mean, it's just, I don't want to say, but I kind of want to say. So you as a professional, is there any type of feeling you have when the Cubs are playing against the Mariners?
None. I grew up in Chicago, and I was a huge Cub fan when I was a kid.
Me too.
My mother was a huge Cub fan. I'd come home from school, and she had this little black and white TV set in the kitchen where she was making her great spaghetti sauce. And she loved Ernie Banks and Ron Santo, who grew up right here in Seattle, went to Franklin High School, and Billy Williams. And that's when I would go downstairs sometimes, turn on the TV, turn down the sound, and pretend I was Jack Brickhouse and do play-by-play when I was 12 years old. So, that Cub uniform is still iconic. It's great. It hasn't changed in 100 years. And, I was a huge Cub fan and a White Sox fan. But when they came to town, I saw a guy with an Ernie Banks jersey on. I go, oh, man, that's pretty cool. But I want to beat him. I want to sweep him.
Yeah, so. Even though you want to beat him, you did look at that Ernie Banks jersey and say, ooh, that's kind of cool.
Oh, I know. He was awesome. Great Rick, ambassador to the game.
Now, I heard that there was a lot of support for the Cubs at the stadium as well. Is that unusual, or is it just because people are so upset with where the Mariners are right now?
No. They were Cub fans. They travel very, very well, just like Boston does and Toronto. So when we play the Cubs at spring training, it's always a sellout crowd, especially there in Mesa, but even in Peoria, because they come over from the east side, and they do the same thing during the season. There were a lot of Cub fans at the ballpark. In yesterday's ball game, we had to try to out loud them, and we'll do that as soon as we start hitting. But there were a lot of Cub fans there yesterday.
Rick Riz, we appreciate your time, brother. Have a great rest of the week, and let's get that win today against those Cincinnati Reds at T-Mobile Park.
Play the Reds tonight. Ken Griffey Jr. bobbleheads giving away thousands. Come on by the ballpark. George Kirby on the mound tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. See you at T-Mobile Park.
Jackie Robinson Day.
Jackie Robinson. Happy Jackie Robinson Day. I'm so glad you brought that up. One of the most significant days in the history of the game of baseball.
Yeah. Take care, Rick Riz. Have a good one.
Bye, guys.
All right. Ursula, we got scenarios coming up next. I want to ask you a question. And you don't have to answer this in front of everyone, but do you know what a hall pass is?
Oh, of course.
Oh, all right. Just want to know if you want to know. Well, it has to do with our scenarios. I can't wait to see your written expression on this one. We'll do that next. Gene Ursula.
Scenarios is brought to you by 1-800-DUI-AWAY.
Now, Ursula, before I get to scenarios, so your other friend, Laura, you went to her house too, huh?
Yes, yesterday. Mm. When I told you, I just told you off the air.
You went to Layla's.
I have two friends, Layla on Saturday, yeah. Laura on Sunday. I'll tell you, I have two friends who are, when it comes to hosting and having parties, they are like in a league of their own.
You know what I want?
I need to learn from them.
You know what I want to do?
What's that?
I wonder if there's a service where you can rent a friend. You know what I'm saying? I'll pay a subscription where you pay $9.99 a month for a subscription to some friends that will invite you over and have nice things like that. See, I ain't got no friends like that.
That's you say stuff like that, and it's not true. And by the way, if you weren't working so much, maybe you would have more of those opportunities.
That's because you're the friend, Gene.
You are the friend.
You want to know what makes jokes funny?
What's that? When if I go with it?
No, if there's a little truth to it.
Oh.
Scenarios! Here we go. My best friend is married. They're generally happy, but it's always been odd because they have an open relationship, meaning they can freely hook up with anyone they want. It's like a permanent hall pass. My friend doesn't cheat, but she has permission. Lately, she has been telling me that her husband really has not been wanting to cuddle at all, and he has been bugging her. And recently, he's shown very little interest in cuddling.
Uh-huh.
She thinks it's a natural part of aging and has talked to him about it, but he says, hey, our relationship is open, so you can use it to your advantage. So he's telling her that. Here's the thing. He encourages her to be and use her open relationship status because that's what he's doing. And he's doing it quite often. I haven't told her about it because it's not my place, and she knows the relationship is open, but I'm trying to tell her this is a real problem. I value our friendships, and this is my best friend. I know that if I told her about this, it would hurt her because it's so personal. And what I mean by tell her about this is that he's actually tried to hit on me. What do I do in this situation? Do I say something to my friend? Because one thing about this open relationship, or if you will, this permanent hall pass, it seems as if they have no rules. What should I do? 888-973-5476 is the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. Ursula, you're up the bat first. By the way, I just want to give myself a round of applause. My edit button on that topic, the way I did, pretty good.
Yeah, cuddle. Yeah, so her relationship is lacking intimacy, but it's the friend who's wondering if she needs to be the messenger to say your husband, who you've given a hall pass to, is actually using that hall pass very regularly and even tried it on me.
Right.
I would normally say be very honest and open in your communication. But in this particular case, I'm wondering if being the messenger is a position she wants to be in.
Am I rubbing off on you?
Yeah. In this case, it could backfire. Unless this is your very best friend.
Right.
And you know that you would survive any kind of disclosure like that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I would normally just say it's always best. Honesty is always best.
I'm
thinking in real time, and I'm thinking, would I, if it were me, would I say, hey, your husband tried to hit up on me? I probably would.
Oh, okay. So I want you to stick to being that Ursula. Yeah, don't be like me.
Say, yeah, I was going to say.
There's enough of me's in the world.
Yeah, I probably would say it.
Yeah,
because otherwise you're being fake, and it's like you're lying by omission.
But this is the problem when you start just saying permanent hall pass, right?
Yeah.
And like you actually don't. It's like the details of a contract, right? You gotta put the details in it. Okay, you can open and you can talk to this person. You can't talk to anybody at little Tommy's school and not at the church. And this is off limits. You gotta write that down. And you start, open hall pass. I want to mess with the best friend. Wow, what? But yeah, it wasn't written down.
My question is, why are they staying in that marriage?
Because
you've got an open hall pass. You have zero intimacy. It sounds like it's causing problems.
Because
it's a lucrative financial partnership.
Because that's happening today, Ursula, more and more. We talk about, on our show, on your top news, top five, we're talking about the homelessness crisis. We're talking about housing affordability.
So there are financial reasons to stick together.
Yes.
So let me get this straight. Her dilemma is, should I tell my friend that the reason her husband has lost his libido is because he's depleted his resources elsewhere to his heart's content? What is... I'm sorry, but like, how many of these open relationships end up being successful? How many of them? Seriously. I think there are probably some people that do it well. And I think there's a lot of people who just end up getting their feelings hurt. And then there's retaliatory cuddling, if you want to call it that. I think it blows up. I don't know. Well, I just don't think it's a good idea.
I mean, it's interesting. Like, an argument can be said for and against an open relationship. And what I mean by that is we already live in a society where one in two marriages end in divorce anyways. That's off top.
Yeah, but it's so like 8 out of 10 open marriage. I'm tired of the open marriage folks being like, boy, you really don't know how to live. And if you really want to spice things up, I'm tired of being immoralized too by people with open marriages.
I mean, look, to each their own, right, Ursula? I mean, if that's what you want to do.
If that floats your boat,
exactly.
You do you. But I know it wouldn't work for me, but the question is.
You do everyone, actually.
Is that friend better off just keeping her mouth shut or letting her know that your husband tried to hit on me too? And I would present it in a way like, I'm worried about you, and my priority and my concern really has to do with you, not your husband. And now, this is what he's doing.
Now, I'll say this before you go, Nick.
In this case,
I'm the opposite. That husband tried to get with me. And because of that, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Now it's not like I saw your husband somewhere else. Your husband tried to get with me. So, yes, I'm telling you. Nick, what do you got?
Well, if I were to wrap this case into a little box and send it off as the answer to her troubles, I'd say he's using this rule as an escape for breaking any rules he had in mind prior to the proposal. And G brings up a good point. The deal is very open-minded and vague with the details. And if I'm with the wife, I'd rip this imaginary contract and start new. And if he's not feeling this change, I think it's time to break the lock and let him go from his cage. I think it seems like he doesn't deserve you if he's more willing to go for an effort to break the rules than to be with you.
Hey, Ursula, can I make a sweeping statement?
You've never had to ask before, sure.
Okay. I think society, more often than not, will judge an open relationship faster than they will judge a cheating spouse.
Interesting.
Yeah, straight up. I do. I think the home, you know, maybe with the homeboys or the homegirls and stuff like that, you know, those things get like, you know.
I think all of it gets judged.
Sure. But an open relationship, like, oh, did you hear? Oh, my goodness. They're in a, But they don't talk like that on a spousal cheating. They don't do that. So are you okay with my sweeping statement? It's good?
No, because I don't think it holds. Because I think people gossip about cheating.
Okay.
I think I stand. What do you guys think? You guys agree with that sweeping statement? Because if it had to be two times in a row in the last few days.
And the way you're going, they'll agree with you.
Agree to disagree comes up next, Gina Ursula.
Too strong. I'm headed to your change.